And we return 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. How are you today, Bonnie?
I'm good, and you?
It's a little bit dreary out there.
Been very strange weather.
Well, January is National Mentoring Month, and today we'll discuss the ultimate mentoring organization, Take Stock in Children. Joining us is Take Stock's Miami president and CEO, Madeline Pumariega. Also with us
is a leading mentor of Take Stock. She's educator Marilyn Schiavo. She's been volunteering since retiring from the Palm Beach School District in 2010. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And more, we also have a young gentleman, Wilnick Gideon. Not only is he a mentor, but he was a Take Stock in Children mentee starting in the 10th grade. And we'll hear his story shortly. Welcome to you, Wilnick.
Thank you.
Glad to see you.
So glad to have you all here. Madeline, let's start with you. Congratulations on
Thank you. Appointment
as president and CEO of Take Stock. Let's begin with an overview, if you would, of the organization.
So thank you so much. Our mission is simple. It's break the cycle of poverty for low-income, young, and deserving youth. And we do that through really having a model of a mentor, of self-responsibility, of a collaboration with the school district, colleges, and universities to ensure that our youth have an opportunity to seek post-secondary education and be able to attend college, graduate from college, and enter the workforce ready to contribute. And so Take Stock in Children served 22,000 low-income deserving youth around the state of Florida.
And how do your high school and college graduation rates compare to Florida's overall rates?
They're well above Florida's overall and the national. 92% of our students graduate from high school. 87% continue on to post-secondary education. And close to 60% graduate from college on time. And so those numbers certainly well exceed local averages as well as state and national, particularly with the group of students that we work with.
What other things besides mentoring does Take Stock do?
Mentoring sits at the core of our model because our mentors bring in the outside perspective, professional perspective, and help to guide those students. But more importantly, what we do is wrap around services. We have college success coaches, student advocates. We work with the children as well as the family in preparing to achieve those educational milestones by grade, ensuring they have the additional support and have the opportunity to connect to additional resources that may be available for them to achieve those goals.
Marilyn Schiavo, you're a longtime educator. Tell us about your experience with Take Stock in Children.
You know, all of my academic life, I always said, oh, I want to volunteer, I want to volunteer, I want to give back, and I always had an excuse for not doing it. And when I retired, I had all this time on my hands, and I said, you know, I need to do something. And I was at a training session, and there was a table from Take Stock in Children. And after talking with the people that were representing Take Stock, I thought, wow, this is some place I want to venture into. I really want to start to help students.
And how much time do you spend?
I spend approximately a half hour to 45 minutes every week.
That's not much.
No, it's not. But I'm texting a lot with my students.
Oh, okay.
All the time texting with them. I have them on speed dial.
And Wilnick, you're in a unique position. You have a unique perspective, I should say, in that, as Joe said, you were a mentee in the 10th grade, and then you became a mentor at Take Stock. Can you tell us a little about your journey and how Take Stock changed your life?
Well, growing up, I didn't even think that I was going to be going to college. I grew up in a less privileged home, and I was able to find out about the Take Stock program through one of my teachers, my English teacher, Mrs. Horn, when I was at Lauderhill Middle School. And she told me about this program and said all I needed to do was apply, and I did, and I think it benefited me a lot. I was able to receive a mentor who was there for me, who kind of molded me, helped me to set goals and plan. And after a few few years, I was able to buy in with it. And he was there with me throughout my high school experience, and also went out to college at Florida State University. He was also there, and I continue to talk to that mentor now.
And you're working on a master's degree now?
Yes, I am. I'm working on my educational leadership degree, my master's in educational leadership, and I'm a dean at Boca Raton Community High School.
Well, Nick, when you were changing your life or when you were turning it around, were you subject to pressure from your neighborhood or from your friends?
Yes, definitely. I grew up around an area where there was drugs, kids stealing, and kids being disrespectful and rude to adults. And I grew up in a very bad situation. Sometimes I couldn't eat. You know, there are times where I couldn't, do a lot of. It was just a difficult time. I can't really explain it. This.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You're explaining it.
Yeah. But that experience taught me a lot, and having that mentor to help me stay focused helped me to channel my energy towards education and to being somebody in my life.
In that environment, was it that if you do well in school, you're not cool? Or?
Yes, definitely. A lot of kids, didn't believe that school would bring them anywhere. A lot of those kids were, into that. The gangster lifestyle, and it was something that I was into as well. I thought that was cool. All the popular kids were doing it, but then when I started to focus on my education, I realized you can be cool while you're smart as well.
Madeline Parmiega, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Tell us about how you bring volunteers in, the educational requirements, and also the vetting of.
So we have close to 8,000 volunteers, mentors statewide. Each of our affiliate programs do outreach and recruitment. We work a lot with corporate partners. We find business and industry that want to give back into our community use Take Stock in Children as that vehicle. And so we're always recruiting. Don't need to have formal education. Most of our mentors do because they come from an educational setting or the corporate world kind of setting and environment, and they go through an application process, are vetted, background checks, and then are placed and assigned with a student that they mentor. And we like to say you can change a life over lunch. Just giving up an hour of your week can change someone's life.
Now, Marilyn, I have a couple of questions. One is, you're changing lives, obviously, of your mentees. How has it changed your life to be a mentor?
Well, I don't have any children. That was a conscious choice that my husband and I made, and now I have two children. It's like I have a surrogate son and a surrogate daughter, and it is something to become so focused on other than us. It's the welfare of these two students and where they're going and the opportunities that they may have missed if they've not been able to partake of this process.
So if you would, just without naming names, just tell us about your relationship with one of them. What have you seen, and how long have you been working with, let's say, who is now like a surrogate daughter for you? How long have you been working with her?
This is my third year.
And what have you seen in the time that you, in those 3 years?
To break the ice and to start to create the mentor-mentee relationship, it takes a little bit of time. She was extremely shy, sharp as a tack, very polite, but not quite trusting of who I was. And I feel like an older sister now because she confides in me and she shares with me when I see her mother. She translates for me to her mother. I've formed a relationship with the family because they know I'm there to help this young lady achieve her dreams.
And how important are the parents in the relationship that you have with the mentee?
She may come from an impoverished family, but her parents are so loving and so supportive that without them, I don't think she'd be halfway to where she is today. I just kind of add the icing on the cake to help steer her in the direction she needs to go in because they're not knowledgeable of that.
Mm-hmm.
But she has a phenomenal family structure.
Will, Nick, did you have that kind of family support?
I definitely had that family support. And she's Marilyn's correct. I just didn't have that correct guidance, the people that you see are the street, thugs, and that's what I was able to see as my mentors before I got into the program. So That she was absolutely correct about that, yeah.
Madeline Parmiega, tell us about the relationship between Miami-Dade College and Take Stock and also Miami-Dade County Public Schools.
I will. We have a great partnership. Take Stock and Children serves 67 counties throughout the state of Florida. 54 different programs do. Here in Miami, Take Stock and Children is housed in Miami-Dade College, but it's a collaboration with Miami-Dade School District along with the college and Take Stock. Take Stock and Children provides resources to the college to be able to have college success coaches, and we work closely with the schools in selecting the students and providing college readiness workshops. Our program, not only do the children sign a contract to stay drug-free, crime-free, and in school, the parents sign a contract that they'll be engaged in those educational milestones. And upon graduation, they have a college scholarship for them. So it's an important partnership with our state colleges and universities along with our local school districts.
We're speaking about Take Stock and Children today. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, we are going to take a short break, but our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@wlrn.org. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're talking about Take Stock in Children with the president and CEO, Madeline Parmiega. Is that correct?
Parmiega, yes.
Parmiega. Okay. And educator Marilyn Schiavo and educator and dean and former mentee and mentor Wilnick Gideon. Well, we were talking about so much in the break, but Madeline, let's talk about what we were talking about, the face of poverty and some of these parents and their positions and, you know, how grateful they are to have Take Stock.
I've been warmed traveling throughout the state, meeting so many of the parents of our scholars, and it's really led me to take a look and reflect of the face of poverty in our state. It's our housekeepers, it's the gardeners, it's different individuals that serve and that are in so many service capacity roles in our community who want the best for their children. So the gratitude that they have for Take Stock and Children, for the mentor that gives up of their time and their talents to help their child bridge the opportunities that maybe someone in a more affluent household may have just as a matter of opportunity. So I have been certainly inspired by so many loving and caring parents that I have met that want the best for their children.
And Marilyn, you wanted to talk about a partnership. We were talking about partnerships with Miami-Dade, and you wanted to talk about a partnership that Take Stock is now forming with Lynn University.
Yes, I recently became a full-time employee at Lynn University as an assistant professor, and got an idea at one of our huge academic council meetings, which was the entire staff at Lynn, that this would be a viable place to market, Take Stock, find mentors, and start to create a pool of mentors to support. And we brought in Wilnick and Nancy Stelway and Kimberly Briard, and we were on the end of the program, and we let Wilnick go up on the stage and speak, and you could have heard a pin drop in the room. And when it was all said and done, people were coming up, and they're starting to sign up and get interested in a mentorship. So we're now starting to form a relationship with the high schools in the area and Lynn University.
How about information for people who do want to volunteer to be mentors?
Quickest ways are our website, www.takestockandchildren.org. There's a way that you can become a mentor, and we link you to your local community and our affiliate in that community.
And let's take a quick telephone call. This is Maria. She's in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there.
Hi, how are you? My question was, I have a daughter that just started a charter school, and she's going to be going to seventh grade next year. My daughter was an honor roll student all her first, you know, years, and lately she's not, you know, I think it's her hormones, you know, are, you know, starting to pop out, and she's just not doing what she's supposed to in class, and the teachers are all, you know, telling me, oh my God, your daughter I don't know, she's done these changes, and she is so willing. She has much, you know, capability to you know, do good, but now she's getting very distracted. So my question was, I was talking to my husband last night because we got her report card. And from being an A student, she's bringing me all these C's and a B. And we were like, wow, what's happening, you know? And we were talking about tutoring, finding her a tutor, and see if, you know. And then I turn on this my favorite station, and I hear you guys, you know, talking about mentors, and I just wanted to find out if you guys can help me.
Okay, Madeline.
Maria, thank you for your call. I think entering middle school is always a tough transition, and into high school for students, we find that. I think a few things. One, if you could find a mentor for her, that would be fantastic. Somebody maybe in an area that she's interested, if she's interested in medicine or legal, trying to find someone and really close to her age, someone who's recently graduated, to help guide her through some of those important milestones. Tutoring may be helpful because she may be struggling in some of the academics, so I think you certainly should consider that. But I find students that find a purpose are much more successful, and that mentors sometimes provide that opportunity. And sometimes it can be a neighbor, it can be a colleague, it can be a friend of a friend, that your daughter will have an opportunity to discuss with them things that are going on, seek their guidance, and then see that this is just one more step towards academic success and getting back on the pathway to that.
At what stage does Take Stock kick in?
We begin our mentoring programs in the seventh grade. Some affiliates start in sixth. We find seventh and eighth grade are key. I really like the eighth grade because it helps serve the transition to ninth grade, which is when they start high school.
So from a low-income family, though?
Yeah, so in order to be eligible for the Take Stock in Children program, you do go through a series of eligibility requirements, and they're based on low-income federal standards for low-income families.
So if Maria wants to get a mentor, what steps does she need to take? What does she do if she qualifies?
If she qualified for Take Stock in Children, then she could apply for our program. We're in the local middle and high schools, public schools. But I think there's other organizations out there that do also provide mentoring, and especially with girls, there's Empower Girls and some other organizations that work just on the mentoring component. And it appears that academically she's a sound student, and her parents are there to provide those opportunities, and maybe just the guidance of a mentor would help her.
Okay, Maria.
Thank you.
And does it also work with charter schools too?
We're in the public schools right now.
Okay, well, she goes to a charter school, but thank you so much. And appreciate it.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to everybody.
We also have someone who wants to know if Take Stock in Children helps Hispanic students in Spanish if need be.
Absolutely, especially here in Miami, when we do our workshops. We do our workshops in English, Spanish, and Creole. And then when we're selecting a mentor for a student, we absolutely have those considerations in place.
Did you want to say something?
My mentee is Spanish, but she is fluently bilingual. So when I'm talking to her parents, who speak very little English, she becomes our translator.
Oh, that's why you were saying she interpreted. Mm-hmm. Well, Nick, bring us up to date with where you are in your life today. You mentioned that you're getting your master's. You're a dean at a school. Give us more information about that.
I'm also a track coach at Boca Raton High School. Basketball coach. I started a step team at the school to empower young minority girls to do better for themselves. And also am working on a book, which I'm going to be talking about my life experience, and hopefully to empower someone else to come out of their situation.
Maybe we have a position at the station.
Sounds like it. How do you have time for all these passions of yours?
My faith in God.
And he has just been selected as the Alumni of the Year for Take Stock in Children statewide. He competed among his peers and was unanimously selected.
Yeah. Madeline, how are you funded?
We're funded through private-public partnerships. We receive funding from the Florida State Department of Education. We also receive funding from education foundations, and we also rely on private funding from different individuals throughout the state that fund our program in terms of scholarships and program services to our kids.
And if one wanted to support, for example, or get in a partnership with Take Stock in Children, what would they do?
GiveTSIC.org. Right there, you can give of your time, your talent, and of your treasure. But we certainly are always open to partnerships.
And we'll have links to Take Stock in Children on our website and on our Facebook page.
And tell me a little bit more about you, Marilyn Chavo. You have such a long career in education. Tell us more about your background.
I have spent most of my career in working with students with disabilities and empowering teachers to work with students with disabilities. And I actually coordinate the master's...
Well, empower is a big word now.
Yes, it is. It is a big word. It's the buzzword. But I actually coordinate the master's program in exceptional student ed at Lynn University right now.
And Madeline, you were... for a term or so, or some amount of time, president of the Wolfson campus of Miami-Dade College.
Yep, I spent 20 years at Miami-Dade College. I began there as an academic advisor, moved up the ranks, was dean of students, and then became president of the Wolfson campus for a little over 2 years, and then made the decision to come to Take Stock in Children and become president and CEO and lead Take Stock statewide, and especially in our efforts around college readiness and college success. When Take Stock initiated, it was really high school dropout. It was a high school completion program, and a few years ago, strategically looking at what our students needed to be successful, more and more focused on how we could create college readiness. And so I've really spent the last 100 days incredibly excited and touched and inspired by so many of our mentors and our students across the state.
That's Before great. We close out the segment, I know there's some events coming up. Would you like to touch on some of those?
Absolutely. Palm Beach on January 25th has a 5K. So if your New Year's resolution is to get in shape and drop some pounds, you've got an opportunity to sign up and
well,
join
Bonnie
us in
a
5K. Bonnie
doesn't need to do that, but she's going to run it anyway.
So that's the Palm Beach Strides for Education 5K.
You got
race.
It.
Okay. And you have more information about that on your website?
Yes, we
as
do.
Well,
yes.
Which is takestockinchildren.org. Anything else before we go? Well, it's been a pleasure to have you. Madeline Pumariega is the president and chief executive officer of Take Stock in Children. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Marilyn Chiavo is an educator and a leading mentor for Take Stock in Children. Thank you, Marilyn. And Wilnick Gideon is an educator, coach, mentor, and about 100 other things.
The next senator from Florida.
And most important, a Take Stock in Children
mentor and mentee. Thank you so much, Wilnick. It's been a pleasure
Thank
to
you.
Have all of you today.
Thank you so much.
Food and Dining up next. It's food and dining time on this rather gloomy Thursday afternoon. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Very inspiring segment with the Take Stock.
Yeah,
folks.
Very much so. Very much so.
Well, it's food and dining time, of course. Joining us is chef, author, and syndicated columnist, my good friend Linda Gassenheimer. What's on the menu today?
Well, hi, Bonnie.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. Well, I love the exciting flavors of Indian cooking, but I rarely make it at home. I think it takes too many ingredients, too much time, but my friend, and he's an Emmy-winning TV chef, says he's going to solve this problem. And he's Raghavan Iyer, and he's here to give us a master class in Indian cooking. He says we can have no-fuss recipes using 10 ingredients or less. And his book is Indian Cooking Unfolded. Welcome, Raghavan Iyer.
Oh, thanks so much for having me
on
today.
So I can go home tonight and do this.
Absolutely.
Well, right, I don't know about Joe, but certainly Barney, you and I could.
Okay.
And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you make Indian food at home, or do you have any questions for our guest? Call us. The number is 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Bonnie, do we have email today?
We do. We even have one already, and it's radio at WLRN.org, radio at WLRN.org. Raghavan, I want to know if when I go home tonight and make one of these meals, can I invite friends? Is it going to be that good?
It's going to be not only good, it's going to be phenomenal.
Okay. All right.
Well, and also with us is our favorite wine guy. It's Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read his wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Gee, I'm sorry to hear it's so gloomy there in Florida. It's beautiful here. We got a couple feet of snow on the ground. It's 18 degrees. It's really pretty.
All right, we won't ask you
but
about...
But I'm going to talk about what wine will go with Indian food, of course.
All right, good. Sounds great. Raghavan Iyer, congratulations on your book. It's a very unusual format. Step-by-step fold-outs showing us basic recipes. Explain how this book works. I don't know any other book like it.
It is, like you said, it's the first of its kind. And what's so unusual about the book is the title is Indian Cooking Unfolded, because it's a book that literally unfolds. Every chapter opens with a fold-out. And it's a pictorial representation of some of the techniques and spices that we tend to use. But the book also unfolds a cuisine that is 6,000 years old. And it really walks you through step by step what it is to create those diversity of flavors and those layerings we talk about. And not really, you don't need a lot of ingredients. And this is the premise is 10 ingredients or less, including spices. And these are main grocery store ingredients.
Well, that's amazing. All right, so Indian Cooking 101. So where do we start? Do we start with the spices?
We start with the spices. And I talk about, you know, looking at the top five spices that you would find in just about every grocery store in this country.
So what are they?
We look at cumin, coriander, mustard, turmeric, and cardamom. And you will find this in any spice aisle, I guarantee you that. And so when you look at those, and those spices are also used in Indian cooking a fair amount. And then you've got your, you know, I call it throwaway spices that every kitchen has, cinnamon sticks, cloves, and peppercorns.
Well, not every kitchen, but now they're going to have them.
Now they're going to have it. But even those are, again, very common ingredients.
Can you buy a bottle of Indian curry that's all mixed already, or do you have to build it up from five or eight different ingredients?
Which we'll talk about what curries are all about, you know, and you think about the world of curries to an Indian in a nutshell. A curry has nothing to do with your commercial curry powders. To us, a curry has everything to do with sauces and gravies. And so when you're doing Indian curries, you're really building all these different flavors in the context of a sauce. So if the dish doesn't have a sauce, it's not a curry to us.
Boy, that's news to me. That's interesting.
So curry means sauce as opposed to yellow powder that
yes.
we see in the bottle.
And that was, you know, 400 years ago when the English came on board. They loved some of the sauces. And so they had the cooks put together a cornucopia of spices. And and that's what they were labeled it as, curry powder. But even now to this day in any 21st century self-respecting Indian home kitchen, you will not find curry powders at all.
So you have curry chicken mm-hmm. in your book. So take us through this recipe. I can't use my little bottle of curry powder.
And I give you the ability to do it if you so wish. But the book has only two blends, and one of the blends is taking some of these half a dozen spices that I talked about and just putting it into a spice grinder and grinding it. So you've got a blend that is sort of a signature blend that gives you flavors that are so intense and amazing. And so that's really the key. So if you don't have 2 seconds to spend in your kitchen to grind those spices, you could buy a good quality commercial curry powder. But the goal is to teach you those techniques that's going to give you those flavors. And so you look at, you take a little bit of canola oil and you stir fry in that onions and ginger and garlic. Mm. And you get this nice and brown.
Fresh ginger and
fresh garlic as well. And once it turns nice and brown, you're going to add a little bit of the spice blend that I talked about.
What about the proportions of that blend? Are they equal?
The ones that I tend to do in the book, for lack of a better word, the blend is called Raghavan's Blend.
So what is Raghavan's Blend?
Raghavan's Blend has cumin, coriander. It's got lots of chilies, dried red chilies, turmeric, and it's got some peppercorns and a hint of cinnamon stick in there too. And so you just take all of those, grind it up, and you've got, you know, when you're grinding spices fresh, you're releasing the essential oils at the last minute.
So when you're talking about these, you're talking about seeds, coriander seeds.
Whole
you're not
spices,
talking about
yes. I'm not talking about
coriander. No powders.
You're talking, with the exception of turmeric, which is for the most part available as a ground product. But otherwise, I talk about whole spices because, you know, you give whole spices to a good Indian cook, he or she should be able to extract 8 flavors from a given spice. And so that's why when I talk about it, to buy these spices as much as possible in the whole seed form, because you also have a longer shelf life with it.
I was going to ask you about that. How important is freshness and how long can we keep the spices?
Whole spices will last you for years. If it's done in an airtight container outside the refrigerator, it'll last you really for a long time. Ground spices that have been released from its vacuum seal packaging, I would say will last you for maybe 4 to 6 months on the high end. But otherwise, you know, when it's whole, you're working with all of these different techniques, and that's what the book really teaches you. Is even though you may see cumin or coriander or turmeric or cloves or cinnamon in a multitude of recipes, the way that I use it and the way I teach you to use it is what makes it so amazingly different.
Well, how do you grind them?
If you take those whole spices, all you have to do is put them into a little coffee grinder that I reserve for spices.
So a separate one.
Separate
not,
one.
Not your coffee.
Not your coffee, because your coffees will have an interesting taste after a while.
Can you use a mortar and pestle?
You can, which is still the old-fashioned way. And, of course, it takes you much longer. But if you want to expedite it, your coffee grinders are maybe $12, $15.
How about a processor?
A food processor won't do as good of a job because you want a grinder that has got a smaller, narrower
aperture,
base.
Yeah.
Yep. And so it does a much better job of grinding it. A mortar and a pestle works beautifully well as well.
And here's the other thing. Now, you talked about cardamom. Cardamom, I think most people probably won't know what it is, so you might explain that, but it's very expensive.
So if
I'm going to buy it, what else can I use it in? It's going to sit in the drawer for the next year?
But, you know, because it's so aromatic and it's got almost a menthol-like quality to it, a beautiful spice. It is the second most expensive spice in the world next to saffron. And you could use it you think about, you know, I live in Minneapolis and talk about cold.
He's glad to be down here. He's in the studio in Miami.
and you look at the Norwegian Scandinavian home kitchens in the holiday, they bake a lot of their holiday cookies and cakes with cardamom, which is a very, very perfumey spice. And so you could use it for, you know, oftentimes, even if you're just making chai, you could actually just throw some cardamom into your tea leaves that are being brewed in either milk or water, and you have a really wonderful cardamom-scented chai as
now,
well.
Now, how is cardamom sold? I know you can buy it ground.
You can actually, don't buy them ground, because it's also more expensive, but you also, I feel like it loses its potency over a period of time, so you're much better off buying the pods. And so that way, in some of the recipes, I'll tell you, leave the pods intact, or you can pry the pods open between your fingernails, and you've got the seeds inside.
That takes forever.
It doesn't, really.
Yes, it doesn't.
It doesn't. And
big,
I'll tell you why. Because if you take a
pod
and just slap it like the way you would do a garlic clove, it comes right out, and then you can tease it right out. You can buy, if you want, the seeds that have been removed from those pods, and they are sold in the grocery stores as decorticated cardamom.
Where can you find those pods, though?
If you just go down to your main grocery store here and walk down your spice aisle, you will see cardamom pods. I guarantee you that.
Hmm. So no special stores involved?
No special stores, and that's the premise of the book.
Okay.
Right. And so, well, you mentioned chai.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the chai spices, and how do you make a really good chai tea?
Which is, you know, interesting, because chai to an Indian means tea. So when you say chai tea, you're being redundant. That's okay. But chai in its pure form is usually black tea leaves that are brewed in milk. And in India, we brew them in whole milk.
So you brew the tea in the milk.
In the milk.
And what spices do you put
in? Now, everyday chai doesn't have any spices in it, but we have occasions where we do what we call masala chai. Masala is the Hindi word, which means blend. It could be a dry blend, it could be a wet blend. And so every region has different kinds of chais. And so, especially in Bombay, one of the chais that we do is chai that is brewed with cardamom and ginger. You take the two together and you sort of coarsely pound it. You know, when you're pounding the two together, you're releasing the essential oils. And you're brewing the tea, black tea in milk and the two spices, and you've got an incredible chai. Put it through a strainer and you've got an amazing... I personally don't like my chai sweetened, but normally in India, which is customary, is they always sweeten their chais.
With what, honey or?
Sugar is what they tend to use, but you could use honey, you could use agave, you could use just about any sweetener. Mm-hmm. The other thing, if you want to do something that's more complex in taste, is actually sweeten it with jaggery, which is an unrefined cane sugar. You find
it's
that in Mexican...
Jaggery.
J-A-G-G-E-R-Y. Or mm-hmm. you could also use piloncillo, which is often used in Mexican cooking as well.
What is that?
That's exactly the same as jaggery.
It's and where sugar. Do you get that?
You could find jaggery. For jaggery, you'll have to go to an ethnic grocery store. But if you don't want to use jaggery, actually, I would recommend using a dark brown cane sugar, which works really well
Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Raghavan Iyer. He's giving us a masterclass, a really big masterclass in Indian cooking. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with the Emmy-winning TV chef and cookbook author Raghavan Iyer. His latest book is Indian Cooking Unfolded, a Masterclass in Indian Cooking. And he's been giving us this great lesson. It's Indian Cooking 101 that we've been doing. But for those nights when now we're back at school and we're back at work and maybe you want a quick and easy dinner in minutes, here's one that uses a lot of spices, since we've been talking about spices. It's roast pork with a hot pepper succotash. And the pork only takes a few minutes to make. I use a dry rub, and it gives the pork a sweet and spicy crust. So I mix some ground cumin, coriander. These are ground. I know we've been talking about seeds.
That's all right.
But this is dinner in minutes, Raghavan.
And what cut of pork?
We're going to use tenderloin. Yes, of course.
I figured.
Well, it's meaty, and it has less fat than the other pork. You could use whatever pork you'd like, Joseph Cooper. I'd like to see you make it, in fact, Joseph Cooper.
I'd like to see you make it, too.
Yeah, well, we'd all like to taste it, actually. Well, I don't know if we'd want to taste it, but never mind. We have coriander, cayenne pepper, brown sugar. We mix it all together, and I spray the pork with a little vegetable oil, and I roll it in a spice mixture, and I put it on a baking tray, and I put it under a preheated broiler. So it boils for about 10 minutes, then I turn it over for another 5 minutes. And don't overcook your pork. It only needs to be 145 degrees. And the hot pepper succotash, very easy. I heat some oil in a skillet. I add some frozen corn kernels and frozen baby lima beans. Sauté those for a few minutes, and I stir in some hot pepper jelly. That gives it a hot, spicy feel. Sprinkle it with some scallions. Well, that complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, we're thirsty. What are we drinking?
Okay, well, Linda wants to know what we should drink with Indian food, and this only confirms what I've always suspected, that she's just trying to stump me.
No, Fred, come on.
But we'll see.
I know
about
you
that.
Can handle it.
Anyway, for starters, only about a third of adults in India drink any kind of alcohol, compared to two-thirds of Americans. So the question is, what do they drink? And I met a very interesting Indian woman at the Miami airport one time who told me the most popular drink with meals there is lassi. Does that sound right, Raghavan?
It's never consumed with a meal. Lassis are yogurt beverages that are usually consumed after a meal or before. With meals, it's always water, which is the beverage of choice. And so, you know, it does vary, but I'm one of those Indians. I'm in your one-third part of the group where I do enjoy
okay.
some amazing cocktails.
Very interesting.
Him drink, Fred.
Yeah, well, for Americans dining in Indian restaurants here or making Indian dishes at home, the rule, the pretty easy rule is if it's a spicy dish, you want something sweet to drink with it, because sweetness kind of soothes the palate from the spicy food that you're eating. So India's curry, spicy curries would go well with lightly sweet white wines like Chenin Blanc. Or if you're making the spicy Indian beef stew called nihari, you might want an extra fruity red Shiraz or something like that. And with a lot of Indian dishes, I think an off-dry rosé wine would go very well. But, you know, that's today, and in a few years, we may be drinking Indian wines with Indian food.
So they're making wine in India?
Already they're starting to. Mm-hmm. They're not making a lot. I Googled it, and I found that India makes 13 million bottles a year for a population of 1.2 billion, and that comes to out to about one teaspoon per Indian.
I'm glad you did the math, Fred. Thank you.
Wasn't easy.
I'll take your teaspoon.
Still, it's growing. I met a couple of young California winemakers who spent some time making wine in India, and they were pretty proud of what they made. Some of it was local grapes like Bangalore Purple, and I would love to taste a wine made of that. But they also make international varieties like Chardonnay and Cabernet and Merlot, that sort of thing. And also, maybe Raghavan is a good example of this. Sociologists report the rise of a new generation of India that's more affluent and more worldly, and they believe it'll be more open to wine. So Western wineries are starting to move into India. Moët & Chandon, the great French champagne company that makes Dom Perignon, is creating a new line of sparkling wines called Chandon Nashik to be produced and sold in India. And this is all part of a global movement that I've written about in the Herald, in which wine production and consumption in the 21st century is moving east and north, away from Europe, with China eventually becoming the world's biggest producer and consumer of wine. And you heard it first.
Well, they've got a lot of people to serve there.
Big changes coming.
Right. Bonnie, you have some emails.
Well, yeah, the first one just says, come back. Says, I'm Cuban. My best friend growing up was Indian. We both learned cooking to teach our families. The ethnic grocer in Miami is called Publix. The Latin mm-hmm. spices overlap heavily, all easy to find. Mm-hmm. And then Mary wants to know, she says Indian seasoning helps her efforts to go meatless several days per week. One thing she doesn't have is an Indian recipe for broccoli.
In fact, Indian Cooking Unfolded has an amazing broccoli recipe. It's a nutty broccoli with mustard, and it's flavored with ground.
What kind of mustard? You're not talking mustard out of a jar.
Mustard seeds. I'm talking about mustard seeds that are ground, and the nuttiness is ground almonds. And so that's the combination that flavors the broccoli. And, you know, obviously mustard and broccoli are all part of the same family.
Wait, sorry. Mustard and broccoli are the same family?
They are.
How does that work?
They're part of the whole brassica family. You've got cabbage, you've got cauliflower, you've got broccoli, you've got mustard. And these all come from the same family of plants. And so it's an interesting combination of flavors, but it's beautiful.
Well, that sounds good. And I know you have a huge vegetarian section of the book because a lot of Indians are vegetarians, actually.
Yes and no. I mean, you do find a high percentage of Indians that do follow a vegetarian lifestyle. But among the coastal areas and in the landlocked parts of the country as well, people do eat meats and fish and poultry. And so, and you know, beef is also consumed in certain communities in southwestern India, for that matter.
Hmm. Do you have any recipes for tofu?
I don't have recipes for – what I have recipes are for paneer, which is a northwestern Indian cheese, which is an extra firm cheese, very similar in texture to extra firm tofu. So in the book, I talk about using extra firm tofu as an alternative if you don't want to either make your paneer or buy paneer at the grocery store. So they are very interchangeable.
Well, what I like, another point of your book, is that you have this thing called extra credit.
Yes.
Which I'm going to need a lot of extra credit here.
I have a feeling, Linda, you probably have an A+ already.
No, thank you very much.
Those extra
And you mentioned that you can use tofu in some of the recipes to substitute it.
Absolutely. And the extra credit, you know, as a cooking teacher of 22 years, I've always believed in arming my students, you know, the knowledge that they need to really shine in the kitchen. And so the extra credit sort of gives them some ideas as to what to do with leftovers or how you could do this dish differently and so on.
Which is a great help.
I just was wondering if you do any catering long distance. can ship it with dry ice.
I do travel all over the country, and I do a lot of consulting. And so I've always said I'm easy but not cheap.
Okay.
Well, it's really a very fascinating book, and anybody interested in learning how to do, if you haven't done Indian cooking or just want to make it a little simpler for you, I like the fact that you don't have to fill up your cupboard with all kinds of spices that you can't find anywhere, which is great. But you know what? It's been a very tasty week. Raghavan Iyer, we're out of time.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to make that chicken tonight.
Thank you. we want to have a taste, don't we, Bonnie?
Yes. Absolutely. Well, with the tofu. If he makes a little portion with tofu.
Yeah, I'm sure Joe will be cooking with tofu.
Well, his book is Indian Cooking Unfolded, A Masterclass in Indian Cooking. It's a beautiful book. It's an instructive book filled with step-by-step photos. And Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Stay warm up there, Fred, in Michigan.
Oh, it's cozy here.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, great to be with you.
Thank you so much.
And you as well.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be talking with Baptist Hospital nutritionist Alice Pereira. We're going to talk about power foods for healing, dealing with cancer and other diseases. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me now.
And bon appetit. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction and online producer Paul Leary. Today's recipe at dinnerinminutes.com, and we have free audio archives and downloads at our website, wlrn.org. More information, links, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. We return Monday with a program about the state of organized religion, spirituality, and well-being. Thomas Moore has written A Religion of One's Own. And now our all-no-quitter calendar for January the 9th. On this day in 1913, 101 years ago, the birth of 37th President Richard Nixon in Yorba Linda, California. Today is a public holiday there. And in 1945, 69 years ago, U.S. soldiers led by Douglas MacArthur invade the Philippines. I shall return was achieved. And one more while we roll 'em. On this day, 1959, 55 years ago, CBS premieres Rawhide, starring Eric Fleming and newcomer Clint Eastwood as Rowdy Yates. The distinctive theme song, covered in the Blues Brother flick, was sung by Frankie Lane. And we leave with a thought from Clint Eastwood, who was a one-term mayor of Carmel, California. Of course, he had an infamous appearance at the last Republican convention. Quote from Clint, "I'm interested in the fact that the less secure a man is, the more likely he is to have extreme prejudice." Our theme music, created by Michael Levine. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the Here and Now. Here and Now from NPR News.